Fish Trapped and Filtered on the Fish on First Podcast Network. My name is Kevin Barral, and I am here with my co-host, Isaac Azut. Isaac, what's up? I'm very excited with the guest we brought on today. I mean, a legend here in Miami, former MLB player. I mean, I'm very excited to have our guest, and I'll just let you introduce him.
Yes, well, like you said, a legend, I would say, here in the broadcasting community in South Florida, Mr. Tommy Hutton. Thank you so much for joining us, man. How are you?
Hey, Kevin and Isaac, I'm good. I'm happy to join you. I don't know about the legend stuff, but just happy to be here.
All right. Well, I guess first thing we can start with is just sort of how you transition. You know, you finished up with Montreal, and that's where you started your broadcasting career. If you could sort of tell us how that transition came about.
Well, it was actually a very interesting transition. I had last year I played was 1981, but in 1980, after the season, I sat down, and this was way before emails and all that stuff, and I sat down and I wrote letters to a lot of ball clubs saying that I knew my career was winding down and I had an interest in broadcasting. So I did that. I got a few responses, but I was with the Montreal Expos playing at the time in 81. And I think it was July or August when I got released, the general manager, John McHale, was actually sitting on the bench, and they released me. I was sitting with Dick Williams, the manager, to one side, and John McHale on the other. He said, but we know you have an interest in broadcasting. If you'd like to stay with the team the remainder of the season, you can help out on radio. So I did that. I did pre- and post-game shows, and I didn't do any play-by-play. I just did color. But then, as the next couple of seasons unfolded, I told myself, I said, look, I was a 248 lifetime hitter. I wasn't a big superstar. So I'm going to try to learn how to do play-by-play and learn more of broadcasting and become a broadcaster as opposed to an ex-player who's in the broadcast booth. So I worked on play-by-play. I ended up doing a little bit more radio each year. And then finally when the sports network TSN came into being in Canada. The first year of that, 1986, I did the television with Ken Singleton. We were partners up there in Montreal, so that's how things started. I actually the amazing thing is that I got released. That was a Sunday, and on Wednesday I worked a game on the radio. So I always tell people in over 55 years in the game, I was really out of the game a couple of days. But actually, I was preparing for that Wednesday broadcast.
Wow. I'm sure a lot of people would wish that, you know, when one career ends, that another one would come about so quickly afterwards. Something I wanted to ask you about your playing career, because it's something that you're sort of known for. This one pitch, I don't know if you've heard of him, Tom Seaver. You own him. You own him. That's like understating a little bit. You hit 320 against him, drew 11 walks, hit three homers, drove in 15 runs. How in the world did you see him so well?
Yeah, and a good OPS. We didn't know anything about OPS back then.
Right.
You know what? He threw a lot of fastballs, and I was a pretty good fastball hitter. It was one of those things that became, because I wasn't an everyday player, but it was one of those things when, if I got on a little bit of a streak and all of a sudden I was with the Phillies at the time, let's say, and we were going to play the Mets, Danny Ozark, the manager, he'd go, hey, you're going to be in the lineup tomorrow. Seaver's pitching. Guys would come up to me in the clubhouse, and they'd go, hey, you're probably good for two or three hits tonight. Seaver's pitching. So it became mental. It becomes a mental thing. And nobody ever believes this, but I actually told him one year, I think it was 73 or 74, we opened the season, the Phillies in New York. Of course, it was Steve Carlton against Tom Seaver. And because he was on the mound, I wasn't the first baseman. I wasn't going to be first base that year. I was just a backup guy. But I opened the season playing first base, and I hit cleanup that day against Seaver. So not too often. I think I only hit cleanup one other time.
And how did you do that day?
I was 1-for-3. I was 1-for-3, but Seaver beat Steve Carlton in a game that was under 2 hours, I would imagine, too.
Wow.
I'm sure. We didn't see that for a while until, you know, now with the new rules. But Tommy, I mean, when we look back at your career, you've never been hit by a pitch in your career.
That's right. That's right.
You had 1,920 plate appearances, and not once you were hit by a pitch. I mean, I don't even know what to, like, that's just an accomplishment that probably will never be done again.
Well, I wouldn't call it an accomplishment. I would just say I was, maybe I was nimble on my feet, quick on my feet. I will say in the minor leagues, and I played 7 years in the minor leagues, five in AAA, I was hit a number of times. So I did get hit in the minor leagues, but for whatever reason, hey, maybe that's why at 77 years old, I'm still in pretty good shape. I never got hit.
Yeah, you're sort of the opposite of Derek Dietrich. That guy would get hit every every five at bats. But you mentioned you did pinch hit a lot in your career, and I was just curious about the mental game. How difficult, or maybe not difficult, it is to stay focused 7-8 innings and be called upon whenever it was, whether it was in the ninth or eighth, you'd be called upon to face a guy sort of cold. How was it to do that?
Well, it was first of all, you always I did anyway. I appreciated any manager that I played for that would give you a little heads up. If so-and-so's coming in, maybe in the sixth, seventh inning, eighth inning, you might pinch hit. If you had a little heads up, that always helped. We didn't have all the knowledge that players have today. We weren't able to go back and look at video of the possible pitcher that we might have to face. It was all on. I used to keep a notebook. I was all doing things like that, and a lot of times, especially in, and I think the shot you're seeing was at Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field was horrible to pinch hit because there was no place to get loose. The dugout was small. You could run up a little runway and maybe get your legs loose a little there. The runway wasn't wide enough to swing a bat, so you couldn't even do it there. Now they have areas where you can hit off a tee and do stuff like that. So there were a lot of ballparks years ago that were tough to get ready and pinch hit in. I took a lot of pride in it. I found myself focusing better. I actually, I think, had a better pinch hit batting average than regular overall average. And I think I ended up with 78, 79 career pinch hits, which I took pride in that.
Yeah, so Tommy, just going back to the broadcasting, you go with a couple teams, you're broadcasting. How did you end up joining what was at the time the Florida Marlins? What was that transition like, process with the interview and just...
Yeah, a cool story. Well, maybe not so cool. Over the years, I became very good friends. We were teammates, became very good friends with Gary Carter, the late Gary Carter, was with the Mets. And Gary and I were neighbors. We used to play golf a lot together. I was working with the Toronto Blue Jays, and Gary and Jay Randolph were the first broadcasters for the Marlins, 93, 94, 95, and 96. And I think it was during the season of 96, I got a call. I was up in Toronto, and I got a call from Gary, and he said, hey, the Marlins, I understand, are going to make some changes, and I believe it was Sports Channel at the time. They're going to incorporate Joe Angel and Dave O'Brien, who are on the radio. And they're going to make some changes. And, hey, maybe you and I can work together. So he was all excited about that. So I said, oh, great, I'll make a couple of calls and I'll, see what's going on. Well, as I got deeper into the conversations, I found out they were getting rid of Gary. And here was my friend who opened the door to give him a call. So one thing led to another, and I ended up getting the job and working my first year in 1997 with the Dave O'Brien and Joe Angel, who split time on radio and TV. And Gary really went into managing in the minor leagues, and I think that's really what he wanted to do anyway. So after a couple of years, we were okay.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. And, you had a long Marlins career, obviously, broadcasting. You're back with them. Is there a favorite moment that you've had in the booth? I'm sure the Roy Halladay perfect game comes to mind. I was actually in attendance for that one as well. Is there a special moment that you really enjoyed being in the booth for?
Just because it's interesting, when they get to postseason, being on television, we're really not in the booth. I remember in 03, Len Casper and I did some pre and post game stuff, so we were involved. The clinching games in 97 and 03 are always fun to think about. I remember the no-hitters. I remember Anibal Sanchez. I remember the no-hitter that A.J. Burnett threw when he walked nine guys. And about the fifth inning, you know, because there were base runners every inning. And about the fifth or sixth inning, I looked over at Dave O'Brien, my partner, and I said, Obie, I said, I think he's got a no-hitter going. And we had to look up on the scoreboard to figure out they had gotten a hit. But you know, I remember that. I remember, you know, seeing some of the bombs that Dan Uggla hit. That group was a good group to be around, Mike Jacobs and Dan Uggla and all those guys. So I remember that, too.
And see that booming drive?
Booming drive? Did he say booming drive?
And his name is Dan Uggla.
There's a simple way to stream your favorite Marlins games without all the hassle.
He struck him out!
The Bally Sports app brings you live games, highlights, and extra team coverage so you can focus on the more important things.
Done it again!
Like rooting for your team.
Way back there, way back, and it's gone! A grand slam!
Bally Sports Florida, the Bally Sports app, and Bally Sports Plus, home of the Marlins.
It's a Marlins win!
That's something I actually want to get your opinion on, Tommy. Obviously, you pinch hit a lot in your career. It's not something that happens anymore. A lot of new rules in Major League Baseball, universal DH, pitch clock. I'm just curious your thought, banning of the shift. I'm curious about your thoughts on a lot of these rules, if there's one that you really dislike or if there's a couple that you really are for.
Yeah, with the DH, there's not as much pinch hitting, obviously, because you don't have the pitcher coming up. Right. And so you don't have as much pinch hitting, but you have more versatile type players, guys like Garrett Hampson, guys like John Birdie, Xavier Edwards, who's just called up. So you love to have guys like that with the DH and with the makeup of the team, the way the Marlins is. I'm really not opposed to any of the changes. I was always a stickler for changing and not having the DH until over the years, most kids that arrived at the big league level, they didn't know how to hit because they didn't hit in high school. Pitchers, they were DHing in high school. So when pitchers could hit and could really swing the bat and help themselves, I thought it was a great game. But I don't mind the DH because over the last 15, 20 years, a lot of pitchers just can't swing the bat, and to send them up there at times was embarrassing. So I don't mind the DH. I don't mind the pitch timer. I think it's great. I think the pace of the game. I know doing games, we find ourselves not looking down at the scorebook and doing things like we used to. You really have to pay attention. And the bigger bags, I don't see much of a difference. I don't think that's made, in my opinion, too much of a difference. Pitchers going over a couple times, maybe we might see a few more stolen bases. But I think the new rules, no shifts, fantastic. if a guy hits a ball, can swing the bat. I mean, if you're going to create more action on the bases and get a few more base hits, it's a better game. It's a better game.
And yeah, just going on to the game itself, talking a little bit about the Marlins, they currently find themselves 2 games over .500 at the moment of their recording. Sandy's going to go on the mound and, you know, at 10 p.m. for us, but pretty soon for them against the Giants, against Anthony Desclafani. Just Tommy, what have been your thoughts on this team? I mean, definitely we're seeing a better product from last year, but we obviously see some issues that still we saw last year that we're seeing this year.
Well, it's a better product, it's a better ball club, I think, than last year. You know, they've had their injuries. Everybody has injuries. I hate to see Jazz and also Jesus Sanchez, because he was really swinging the bat well before he got injured. And I'm talking about two left-handed bats. And somewhere down the road, that's going to have an effect, because you get some good right-handed pitching, you like to have a couple of solid left-handed bats in the lineup. And with those two guys on the IL, you're not going to have. But watching the way Skip Schumacher handles what he has, really been impressed. I mean, the guys play hard for him. He's hit and run a handful of times, maybe more, which you don't see too often anymore. And he plays that kind of game. And the bullpen, not always crazy about seeing a young pitcher coming out after five innings, but because down the road, you're going to wear out your bullpen and guys are going to get burned out. But so far, so good. The bullpen's been good. I think as the year goes on, hopefully we'll see Luzardo take games a little deeper, maybe Cabrera. I know they're going to be real careful with Eury Pérez. And when Trevor Rogers comes back, Hopefully he can take games a little bit deeper. And I know Sandy's going to turn things around because all of his stuff is there. He's throwing the ball well, and he just needs to keep the ball down a little bit more, and he'll be fine. Yeah, people keep asking me, what's wrong with Sandy? He'll be fine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I want to go back to something you mentioned, the left-handed bats or lack thereof. One of the main one, I think, on this team is Jess Chisholm Jr. And some would say, you know, this, he maybe doesn't get hurt if he's in center field, if he's not in center field. What were your initial thoughts when the team decided to put him in center field when they acquired Luis Arraez?
Well, first of all, let me ask you, how much time did he miss last year?
A lot.
What position did he play last year?
Second base.
All right. If you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt. So it's not because of center field. What was your question again?
What's your thoughts on how he's adjusted?
I thought he made a great adjustment. When I heard in spring training that that was going to be the plan, I had no issues at all. The only issue I had was, does he want to play center field? And he does, and he did at the time. And he's put in a lot of work. He's put in a lot of time. And I've watched him play, and I don't think he's had a couple of misplays. He's had a couple of misreads. That's to be expected. But other than that, overall, I think he's done a really nice job.
And then the other player I wanted to ask you about is Erie. I mean, we've already seen this guy two starts in. What have been your initial thoughts on the kid? We saw him in spring training, struggled a little bit, but showed the potential he had. And, I mean, he's looking good in the big leagues, and he's now slated to start at Coors Field against the Rockies.
Yeah, that'll be interesting for him. You know, it's never a great place to pitch. But I think the thing that's impressive to me is, first of all, he's 20. Secondly, he's 6'8", and he's able to repeat his delivery. And he's always, even when he was 18 and 19, he's always come with good control. That's always been one of the things that's been said about Iori. And that's amazing, number one, for a young pitcher, and number two, for a guy who's 6'8".
0-2 pitch is over, called strike three, the first of many in the big leagues for Eury Pérez.
You think it's difficult for a person of his height to just repeat delivery the way he has. I don't know if you're a big run differential guy, but the Marlins currently, I believe, have the second worst run differential in Major League Baseball. But they're two games over 500. Do you think that this is sustainable for this team? Do they have what it takes to go deep in a late September still in it?
I think they do. I think it'd be better if the two left-handed bats were back in the lineup.
Right.
But if they can sustain while those guys are out, you never know. We saw it with Philadelphia last year. If you just get in, that's all you need to do. And all of a sudden, if your pitching starts to click at the right time, that's all that matters. And the last time I checked, they don't look at run differential to see who's first, second, and third place in the league. They look at first, second, and third place, who's the wild card. Yeah, it'd be nice to have a big run differential the way the Atlanta Braves do. But if they just keep battling away, I think this is a real telling road trip. They're out for 10 days. Not easy. I mean, San Francisco, then you go back to Denver, and then back west to Anaheim. Giants are playing pretty good. Denver's always been a tough place for the Marlins to play. The Angels, they got a good chance of running into Ohtani in one of those games. So this is a tough trip. If they can play 500, if they go 5-5 on this trip, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's actually word for what we were saying before you hopped onto that. If they can get out of there 5-5, that's, I think, best case scenario for this team. Last thing I wanted to ask you about this team specifically, obviously Skip Schumacher's first season as manager, and it just seems like he's, you know, making all the right moves, whether it's bringing in Brazoban at the right time or it's giving Segura a few days. Just seems to be doing everything right. What have been your thoughts on Skip's first season?
I like the way he's handled a lot of guys. I love what he did with Gene Segura, really struggling, and a guy who you know eventually is going to hit, and a guy who doesn't like to come out of the lineup. He wants to play. So that's a move that a manager has to make, and he did that and was able to give him, with an off day included, was able to give him 3 days. And since that time, he's been on fire. He swung the bat 10 times better. So it's little things like that that managers do, bringing in a pitcher at the right time. Don't like to see all the bullpen usage, but I think he's used it well when needed, brought in the right left-hander, the right right-hander. And then he also he gives guys a day off, a Soler, maybe a Gurriel probably needs a day off once in a while. Guys like this who Gurriel's 38, 39 years old. So he does that. So all in all, I think he's done a really nice job.
And then with Sandy, do you think maybe he's, you know, with Sandy, we see the Chicago game, both Chicago games where he leaves them in the ninth and then the eighth. Do you think he's maybe leaving him out there too long where, you know, hitters are maybe trying to figure out what Sandy's doing to them? I mean, this team has struggled, at least the pitching staff has struggled a lot, you know, the third time through the order. Do you think maybe leaving him out a little too long is a mistake? Although, you know, we know Sandy, he doesn't want to get out of this game, but you know, at some point you got to take him out and rely on the bullpen, which, you know, Floro and Puck, and unfortunately on the IL, they've been very reliable.
Yeah, they are, but they can't pitch every night. And I think when Sandy's there, he's the best bet you have. He would be the first to tell you if he made the pitches that he should have made in those scenarios, he would have still been there. And I think the worst thing, and you guys would probably, maybe not, maybe you wouldn't be all over, but let's say Sandy is out there, a little struggle, but he's still got the lead, and now they go to the bullpen, and a couple guys give it up. Now what are you going to say? Hey, should have let Sandy in. He's done that before. He knows what he's doing. So if it ever comes to that, I'd rather see Sandy Alcantara out there.
I agree. And that Chicago instance, I do think it was – that one was the one argument where I was like, you know what, with Bellinger coming up, I think you go to Puck in that scenario. But, you know, I agree with that. I'm sure if things went south with someone else on the mound, it would have been complaining anyway. Last thing for me we want to ask you about is just obviously the 30th anniversary, the Marlins Museum. I don't know if you had a chance to go check it out. The Teals coming back every Friday. Your thoughts on the Marlins' real Teal history coming back this year?
I think it's a great idea. The museum – I was able to go through a little bit the other day, took some time and went out there. I think the teal uniforms on Friday, the throwbacks are fantastic.
Amazing.
Bringing in guys every weekend, guys from the history. I think it's important to celebrate the history of your franchise because – that history will get longer and longer, and will build longer and longer. I mean, you look at a franchise like the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, you're talking over 100 years, and the Marlins in just 30. So I think it's been great, and I think it's really important to do that.
Yeah, and I think with that we could wrap it up, Isaac, unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, just thank you very much, Tommy. Even as a very young kid, I've been listening to you, and whether it's Rich or with Paul, it's just been a pleasure to listen to you on TV and now get to interview. This was really awesome. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, Kevin, Isaac, my pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you guys.
And with that being said, from Tommy, from Isaac, myself, we'll see you guys all in the next one. Peace out and go fish.